Greetings, cultivators from around the world. Jordan River here, back with more GrowCast coming at you with no protein coat. Today we have Matthew Gates on the line to talk about viruses and viroids and much, much more. This is an awesome episode. It's very, very enlightening. I know you're going to love today's exploration. Matthew has a lot of good information to share that's going to help you in your garden and help stave off those nasty viruses and viroids and know what you're looking at if you do pick one up. So before we get into it with Matthew, gotta give my love to AC Infinity, one of my favorite partners, acinfinity.com, code GrowCast15. What do you find at AC Infinity? Just about everything you need to get growing, and their products are the best. They have their own engineers and they manufacture the most sturdy, reliable products in the game. The best tents, I stand by this, the best grow tents in the game are AC Infinity tents. Code GrowCast15 saves you 15% site-wide. The best inline fans in the game, AC Infinity fans. The S Series has a 10-speed fan controller. It's cheaper. It's super, super nice. The Light Series is even more affordable. And then there's the nice T Series with the controller that mounts right outside of your tent, lets you control your climate and humidity. We love AC Infinity. They also make lights and pots and scissors and ratchets and so much more. The best in the game, GrowCast stands behind them. Find everything at acinfinity.com, code GrowCast15 for 15% off. And always send us a screenshot of you using our code so you can be entered to win free seeds each and every month. That's acinfinity.com, code GrowCast15. Get your tents, get your lights, get your fans, everything you need. Some of my favorite grow gear in the game, AC Infinity, everyone. All right, let's get into it with Matthew Gates. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in again today. Before we get started, as always, I urge you, share this show. Tell someone about GrowCast. It's how you can help us the most. And see everything that we're doing with the show at growcastpodcast.com/action. There you'll find the membership and the seeds and the classes and everything we're doing. Thank you so much to all the members. I appreciate your support. And thank you, listeners. Today, we have pest expert, and I would say much more, Matthew Gates on the line. What's up, Matthew? How you been, man?
I'm doing well, productively.
That's a good response. I like that. I can definitely jive with that. Me and Matthew were kicking it just recently down at the San Diego Living Soil class. That was a really cool class, man. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for spotting that rotifer, by the way. You know, we were scoping, hunting for nematodes, and I'm like, oh, look at that. I just saw the mouth part of this microorganism. I said, look at that. Looks like an omnivore nematode. And Matthew Gates goes, I think that was a rotifer. And after some investigation, you were absolutely right, man. You know your stuff, brother. And again, thank you for showing up to that class. That was a blast.
Thanks. Many fond memories looking at microbes in high school labs with our microscopes and stuff. Really enjoyed doing that personally.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole little microscopic universe. It's also cool to look at pests up close like that. You know, I know you're a big insect guy. So when you get down to that micro level, it's just everything's fascinating, you know?
Yeah, and you can see some really interesting details that you just can't appreciate.
Yeah, right? With the macro. So everybody follow Sync Angel on Instagram is where you can find them. You know, Matthew. Zenthanol on YouTube. Go and subscribe. Today, we are not focusing on insects, though. Today, we are focusing on viruses and viroids. It's a subject that's been coming up quite a bit. It's always a hot subject in the cannabis industry, but I feel especially lately. And Matthew is a great tome of knowledge to dig into this. So, Matthew, if you could kind of start from the top, talk about viroids, what they are, how viruses and viroids differ from one another, and what we're kind of dealing with here.
Sure. I'll try to be very concise here. Basically, viruses, you know, there's a bunch of different words for like what we might call like viral replicates or something like this. Basically, there's a bunch of these like codes of DNA, essentially an RNA that exists that kind of have some functions that kind of remind us of cells, right? Viruses are an example. You even have terms like megavirus, which is a particularly large virus. And there are different families of viruses that we can track in a similar way that we do for like other microbes, like fungi and bacteria and things. We can kind of see, you know, a line of descendants, but it's tricky with viruses because they have a really interesting capability that we also see in some other microbes, which is basically they're making use of, in some cases at least, genetic material from their hosts or from sort of other avenues.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they mutate so much, that's the other thing, much more than even, you know, bacteria do, and they're very well renowned for this exact capability. So viruses are constantly replicating. They're like the genetic code in your cell, you know, aspects of it. And that's how they're recognized, and that's how they're able to parasitize or otherwise colonize organisms. Sometimes very disparately related organisms. Sometimes they're only carried. Sometimes they replicate totally in another host, in both hosts. Sometimes it's only one or the other. So a virus is essentially like a line you can think of genetic code, RNA or DNA, with a coat protein typically associated with it. This coat protein is very important because it kind of works like a cell membrane or cell wall does for, you know, plant or animal cell, in that it might have, you know, it'll have like a structural components that might allow it to move, allow it to interact with the host cell in some way, potentially.
Right.
And then viroids are basically viruses. In a way, I'm giving a very non-technical explanation here, but they're basically like viruses without the coat protein. There's also things like retroviruses and other stuff like that, but we won't get into that, I think, here. We'll mostly talk about viroids and viruses of plants and how they relate to other things, I think.
So that lacking that coat protein is what differentiates a virus from a viroid. And doesn't that also make the viroid a little bit smaller, therefore? Is that something that I read correctly?
Yeah, that's right. That's true. And, you know, there are a few other sort of factors to consider, but those are like the two really important things or easiest things to think of, essentially.
Sure. Sure.
Viroids tend to be a lot less complex. And the other really important thing is that while viruses will, for example, with a plant, you know, it'll somehow make contact with the cell machinery, perhaps through wounding, perhaps it has no actual good way of getting into the plant cell except for through wounding, which is very common for a lot of plant viruses. But they'll get in there, the coat protein will come about, it'll come out, it'll dissolve, the genetic code will be then read like it was the code of the cell, and then replicated. So the fact that it is so similar is what makes it so sort of insidious.
Mm.
And it'll cause the cell, this happens in different ways for different viruses, but essentially it manipulates the cell into making more of itself. And in the case of a viroid, they don't encode for any genes. This genetic code is really nefarious for a different reason. And they encode no genes of virulence. What they do is that they essentially take up the machinery, basically is processing, and limit the ability for the cell to create the, express the genes that it needs to for the plant to function.
Right.
And so in that way, the normal sort of antiviral or some of the normal antiviral techniques for a plant don't really work for it.
Wow, that is super, super fascinating. And it makes sense the way you say that, you know, when it takes over the resources and it starts replicating itself. There's a lot of parallels there between viruses and sicknesses in humans. I also liked what you said about it moving around when it comes to a virus. That is very fascinating. But these viroids that plants, I don't want to say suffer from universally, that plants, let's say, collect over time. Are they all harmful? My understanding is some are harmless, more or less, and just part of, you know, the plant's microbiome, just like viruses are part of you and I's microbiome?
You're right. You know, it's very common, especially with plant health, but also all kinds of sort of animal biology, where it's really easy for us to, even from ancient times, sort of detect or see the results of a pathogenic virus. But you need much more advanced and sophisticated tools in order to evaluate the microbes, the fungi, the bacteria, and indeed the viruses that are maybe not so negatively effective or perhaps even positive in some cases. There are some really interesting examples of this. Viruses can also degrade because they mutate very much. So you can get like strains or sort of neat little interactions where, you know, a virus gets incorporated into the genome, the collection of genes of an organism, or partly, or it does, and then mutations happen after that, and then that body gets kind of cut to pieces. Humans have ARC genes in our heads. Those are very important for short-term memory, and those come from a retroviral event that happened a very long time ago. So there's a lot of, and the same thing is also true for mammalian gestation, you know, what we consider like, you know, different from like lizards and things that develop eggs and then lay those eggs. The mammalian embryo is also highly influenced by such an event. So there are some very interesting ways to answer that question about how viruses are beneficial or not.
From a cannabis perspective, would you speculate, because I mean, this is something that's certainly been speculated on, that viruses can change the way that cannabis expresses, maybe even change, who knows, things like coloration, obviously, but also, I don't know, terpene profile or potency or some other immuno response that affects the things that we care about?
It's the sort of thing that if I were to read it in a research report, I would not be surprised to find that that's the case, definitely. How and why and which mechanism that would be, I'm not sure. But like, for example, with some viruses that cause problems, you know, the changing color and other sorts of things are, you know, perhaps an influence of, you know, dysfunction. Whereas, you know, another virus, I mean, I guess you could consider it all like a change from the norm. But in other cases, there's no symptoms at all, you know, with the virus being in the plant.
It's fascinating stuff, man. But let's get into, just a minute, we're going to get into the specific ones that kind of plague cannabis. But can you talk a little bit about how viruses are transmitted, how they embed themselves and become part of the plant, and then also can transmit from one plant to another through a variety of different, I don't know, vectors, as it's called, right? Transmission sources.
Yeah. And so there's a bunch. I don't want to sort of go super detailed, but essentially, for a lot of plant viruses, at least, movement between plant to plant, either the same species or plant that's a neighbor, for example, oftentimes it'll happen through, usually the ones that we have documented at least are mostly through insect vectoring. So an insect, usually this is a hemipteran, you know, one of those insects that has like a sucking mouth part, sort of a, almost like a hypodermic needle.
Piercing
mouth part.
That makes sense. It's piercing the plant and then it's carrying some of that virus afterwards.
Exactly. And not only that, what's really critical is that they don't do a lot of damage when they do it. They don't do a lot of structural damage. In some cases, like with aphids, I think that in some cases they can probe a cell and not even like threaten its like structural soundness. So in that way, a virus can very easily be transmitted. So that's a really common way. Another common way is through mechanical transmission, which is a technical way of saying through the movement of a physical part of the plant onto another physical part of the plant. This is another way this can happen. And another way is through human intervention, through like cutting stems and things like that, which is a lot like the mechanical transmission that might happen in nature.
Right. I know this is possible, but I don't know how many viruses and viroids are capable of doing this. But do we worry about planting plants in the same bed, the mycelial network being able to transmit some of these viroids?
Well, with viroids in particular, there is some research that shows that they can be vectored by soil-borne fungi. So I would say, yeah, I would say it's possible.
Yikes.
There are some other people that I've heard speak who are sort of specialists in this sort of pathogenesis. The sort of pathway of how they infect, that perhaps water might be possible.
Or, oh, sure.
Yeah, you know, and again, it kind of sounds plausible when I described the biology earlier. And then when viroids get into the tissue, they often use what are called plasmodesmata, which are like little chambers in plants. You know, that water is, of course, very important for plant cells. They have this massive organelle called a vacuole that stores a lot of water. And water is also how they're all connected through these little gates. And so they're very small. And for a number of reasons, they've evolved to not really allow a lot of things to go from one to another. There's obvious reasons why you wouldn't want that, like in this case. But in fact, viroids and perhaps other viruses are able to get through, in some cases at least, these channels.
Jeez, that is really wild stuff. So everyone, you know, that we're going to get into solutions and things like that. Don't freak yourself out, but put this on your mind. You know what I mean? If you're picking up a clone and there's an HLVD test, you know, there's a mosaic virus test, that's a good thing. You know, that's some added reassurance. And be careful when you're sterilizing your tools and things of this nature. I hear that some people will settle for nothing less than a bleach solution, and that the lighter ain't going to cut it, and alcohol ain't going to cut it, and all these things, and that you need a bleach solution for some 60 seconds or more. If I'm being honest, I am not very precautious about that sort of thing. I do pop a lot of genetics from seed. I don't take in a lot of clones, but it's something to have on your mind as a grower. And like Matthew was saying, if you're getting these kind of virus symptoms that you can tell, like, you know your nutrition is on point, you know your environment is on point, maybe you've been running this cut for a while, maybe you brought in some new cuts, and the plants just aren't performing the same. They've got stunted growth. They're not yielding right, or they're dudding, starting to dud a little bit and not have the effect for the trichome production, things of that nature. It could be a viroid at hand. So let's talk about the big ones, man. HLVD, hop latent viroid. This is something that's very, very talked about. Apparently coming from hops, which is so close to cannabis. Was that some cross-contamination of species? Did a hops grower cut his cannabis and cause this outbreak? How did that work?
I suspect that hop latent viroid, what we call hop latent viroid, perhaps existed before the split between cannabis and hops, which is, depending on who you're talking to, maybe 20 to 30 million years ago.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so it's possible that in some form or another, it was in an ancestral population and is perhaps shared, you know, natively between cannabis and hops. Certainly, there were people who were growing hop that did not have it, and there was actually a massive problem with hop latent viroid in American and European crops. And essentially, one of the really important results of that is that certain kinds of hop just cannot be practically grown in certain places, because the resulting damage basically just makes it harrowing and costly and is lethal. There's really no conventional cure.
Jeez, so it really fucks up the hop market too?
That's right. And what the lasting influence has been is that people just don't grow certain cultivars of hop, which if it happened in cannabis, I think would be, you know, particularly sad and tragic.
Absolutely. And you can see how that happens, right? As expansion for demand continues to rise and the production becomes commercialized, these types of things become much more important. And therefore, they start selecting for not anything else than sometimes a resistance to the worst possible antagonist, in this case, like hop latent viroid. I had no idea that it had smashed the hop industry like that, though. That's wild. We need to take a lesson from that, I suppose.
I think that would be a really great and prudent move.
So, okay, so really putting the burden on the home grower listener now, but it's true that you got to be aware of this sort of thing. So talk to me more about hop latent viroid, what it does, how it works. What can you tell us about this specific viroid? We will be right back with Matthew, but before that, shout out to the Foop. TheFoop.com or Amazon.com/Foop if you prefer. Grab your certified organic fish waste-based nutrients. I love the Foop. I'm using the Foop in my garden right now, and they're doing Black Friday. It's already on, folks. Go and get it. Head over to the site. Now they're doing a new one deal. Buy one, get one free on everything in the home grow section, plus free shipping. That's right. Buy one, get one free. Code GROWCAST even stacks, I believe. And you're going to get free shipping all at thefoop.com or amazon.com/foop. If you're a commercial grower, there's a good buy two, get one free deal where you can get huge pails of Foop sweetener and Foop nutrients. Get that buy two, get one free. And finally, if you're a hydro shop and you don't carry Foop yet, first of all, what's wrong? Come on, seriously, grab yourself some Foop. It's certified organic. A lot of growers are looking for this stuff, and it brings out some amazing flavors out of your terroir. Believe it or not, that's free shipping on everything, including the commercial growers and hydro shops. Find it all. Black Friday won't last long, only a few days left. These deals end soon. So go to thefoop.com or amazon.com/foop. Make sure that you use code GROWCAST or mention GROWCAST if you are a hydro store. No excuses, guys. grab that FOOP, grab it before the sale is over. And Growcast Nation, if you know a retailer that should be carrying these organic products, make sure to shout out the FOOP. Thank you to all the stores who are supporting FOOP and supporting us as we push forward with organic home grow and home grow of all kinds. Thank you to the FOOP. Grab those Black Friday deals. Use code GROWCAST. All right, let's get back to the show with Matthew. Talk to me more about Hoplite and Viroid, what it does, how it works. What can you tell us about this specific Viroid?
So Hoplite and Viroid is an entity that essentially the problem that it causes is that cells that are infected with Hoplite and Viroid, the machinery that takes genetic code, the process of taking the genetic code and turning that into proteins, is basically used up and is spent by the Hoplite and Viroid genetic code. So the Hoplite, and also the genetic code of Hoplite and Viroid, is very unique. It has these sort of hairpin or sort of circular sections of it that allow it to evade factors that are in a cell that would normally detect, basically become attracted to and destroy, like a viral strain, for example. So plant cells do have sort of antiviral immune responses you could think of intracellularly. But, these factors are very complex. They pyramid on each other. There's like a bunch of other things that are also coming together as like a nice puzzle. So what Hoplite and Viroid also does is that it splits into little things called microRNA. And these little segments will latch on, and basically you could think of it as like jamming up the cell machinery. And it will cause certain strands of genetic code to basically be like recognized as problematic. It might cause them to degrade, or it might cause them to just sort of ball up. So there's all these different effects that viroids in general have, and Hoplite and Viroid has this effect.
So again, you mentioned this idea that it's hijacking the plant's resources. And is it specifically these damaging ones that seem to take away all the resources that are being used for the things that we want? Like I said, this phenomenon of dudding, where these plants that used to be covered in trichomes are now producing none. It kind of makes sense with what you're saying, is it's sapping its resources and redirecting those resources.
Yeah, like in another case, another pathogen's sort of situation, we might say that it's like a fungus, like powdery mildew or something. It's stealing resources and then using those resources as like metabolic energy to do other stuff. Mm-hmm. But viruses don't really have this. And with the Viroid, basically what it's doing is it's not attacking a specific place. Like some viruses might colonize just the chloroplast of the cell or something like that. But what Hoplite and Viroid does so differently is that everything just doesn't express. Everything from like really important things related to just basic photosynthesis and like transporting sugars and things like that. Everything very basic to like the secondary metabolite production, immune production, all these other sort of factors, tissue growth, all of it. It basically just stops working. It's like all the construction workers went away and you just kind of degrade. So that's why it's like stunting and yellowing, and you get all of these like developmental disorders that happen from it. And as the load increases, more and more of the cell processes get devoted to viroid replication.
Man, this stuff is like hell on wheels here. It's invisible and it's real, real nasty. It sounds like Hoplite and Viroid is probably one of the worst that the cannabis industry is dealing with. That and tobacco mosaic virus are the two that I hear a lot. Interesting. I had heard how close hops and cannabis were, but tobacco and cannabis, I didn't understand that those two would be close enough to pass a virus or a viroid.
Yeah. So tobacco mosaic virus is a virus with a capsid, a protein coating. But the interesting thing is that viruses, because of their very highly mutational nature and because of the fact that animals, plants, fungi, they all still have cells, bacteria, it's a cellular base of life. In fact, there are theories about the beginning of life, the origin of life, that purport there might have been what we call an RNA world, And without getting super detailed, basically, you know, some of the building blocks of life could have perhaps, you know, resulted in what we would call like a virus or viral-like entity that might have colonized the first proto-cells, you know, if we want to go there. Wow. And so it's possible that they, from the very beginning of cellular life, had a very strong influence on the development of cells. And it seems like this makes sense because we see a lot of conserved ways of dealing with viruses between various forms of life, like plants and animals. Mm-hmm. And so tobacco mosaic virus is one of those viruses that can move like through hundreds of different plants because at their core, they're able to unpack and replicate the virus.
I'm going to catch a cold from my plant, man. Now that'd be something, let me tell you. Yeah, the TMV, I hear a lot of talk about it because of the visual symptoms that my understanding is can occur. The mosaic patterning, right? This, I don't know if it's classified as variegation, but this change in the color of your leaf to, you know, a checkerboard pattern would be one way to put it, or a pixelated pattern. What can you tell me about tobacco mosaic virus and how it may differ from hop latent viroid?
It's a good example because both of them have a lot of similarities like other viruses and viroids. But like with hop latent viroid, it sort of causes a general decrease in sort of genetic expression. All kinds of things stop working. But with tobacco mosaic virus, the reason why it causes the effect that it does is not because it's some magical curse. And so this is just the mark of the beast,
yeah,
here.
Yeah, totally. Mark
it. It's because it affects, you know, factors related to chlorophyll production. And so chlorosis is, or the, you know, the creation of yellowing in the leaves is because of this sort of negative effect that it has. It might also affect other things, and certainly it does in some ways, but that is why we get this sort of checkerboard or mosaic patterning. Usually we wouldn't call this variegation most of the time, at least in like maybe a scientific or agricultural context. Variegation is usually like something that could have a similar sort of look, but is caused by something maybe native or endogenous to the plant, and is not caused by like an outside agent like a virus.
So with it affecting the chlorophyll almost exclusively, not as devastating as hop latent viroid. Maybe it messes with your photosynthesis a little bit, but it doesn't. Does that make it less devastating?
I would say that, like, if we were rating them in the way that you're kind of talking about, I would say, yeah, because in the case that hop latent viroid just nukes everything, both of them are conventionally not curable, at least as far as I understand it, in most cases at least. And also both of them are usually lethal to the host. It's kind of equivalent, but yeah, like you say, hop latent viroid affects way more and tobacco mosaic virus affects less, essentially. But they both have a lethal effect.
Oh, really?
Usually.
Damn. See, I have not, knock on wood, I've not encountered these problems yet. I've encountered a lot of problems, but these aren't two of them. But hold on here. Let's dig into what you just said. When people discover they have these things, I've seen a couple of different responses. So before we get into like tissue culture and that sort of thing, I've heard about IPM kind of protocols revolving around microbiology, right? Some immuno-Ts and things like that. To maybe help beat back the virus a little bit. But you're saying there is no cure for this outside of maybe cleaning up the genetics with a tissue culture clone, something like that?
Yeah, in the conventional sense of like applying like a some sort of like a pesticidal agent, for example, or right, biocontrol. Although there is some research that shows that there are some organisms, perhaps microorganisms or compounds from them, that might be able to have the effect that you're actually referring to. The thing about it, though, is that I'm not very familiar with a very sort of, you know, sort of stringent or, you know, well-researched aspect. Recently, there's another conventionally incurable microbe. It's kind of like a virus. It's a very small bacteria called phytoplasma. And it has a lot of really negative problems that causes with citrus, for example. And for a long time, we said the same thing, but we were able to use, I think it was, one example was oak leaves. There were compounds in the oak leaves, and they just extracted it from the leaves and applied it, and it actually allowed the bacteria to not have a negative effect on the plant. Not kill the bacteria, but it changed the way it interacted with the immune system. Yeah, isn't that wild? So I don't want to say that something like this is not possible, but I'm not familiar with any really exemplary examples. I hope that changes.
No, yeah, right? And we have like legacy growers who have their ways of dealing with it. And there's probably something to that. Like you said, coming from a microbiological standpoint is usually the approach that these growers will take to battle these viruses, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in most cases, something like tissue culture would be necessary, which is kind of like a way of cheating the pathogen out of the tissues.
Well, let's talk about that, right? This tissue culture cloning is, let me just, you know, for a 30,000 foot view, if somebody's just tuning into the show, maybe, it's a cloning process where traditionally you take a cutting of a plant, a large portion of a plant, and use that to propagate a new plant. But with tissue culture, you can use even the smallest little piece of new growth. And one of the benefits to that is it true that viruses and viroids, things of this nature, are usually less present in that new growth? So therefore, the tissue culture cloners take this little piece and propagate it in like a petri dish, and the cutting comes out clean or cleaner. Do I have that right?
Yeah, basically. A lot of times you'll also apply, as I understand it, you'll apply like thermotherapy. You know, you'll apply a heat source and you'll perhaps like kill the virus, but not the plant tissue.
Whoa.
You know, the gene, you know. Yeah. So that's sometimes an option as well, as I understand it. But yeah, you're right. Like we were saying in the very beginning, basically viral particles like these, whether they're a virus or a viroid, their key is that they get into a cell, they get replicated a lot, and then they move on to other cells. And they may change a little bit in how they do this exactly between different viruses, but that's essentially what you're doing. So to counter it, what they're doing through tissue culture is to sort of get rid of as much of that viral load, like you're taking a bucket of water on a ship and casting it back into the ocean, you know?
Bailing yourself out little by little.
Exactly, right? And in a very highly sophisticated way, you sort of rid the virus from the plant cell.
So it is, like you said, this level of virus, this viral load, it is like a kind of, how do I put this, quantitative game to where I've heard anyways, where you need multiple runs sometimes if a plant is really, really heavily infected with a virus or viroid, whereas you might only need one tissue culture clone if it's only a little bit.
Be honest, I'm not familiar with this particular thing, but I will say that it is that conceptually is what you're saying is true. That essentially, you know, you have this sort of, it's almost like a color gradient, and you might have like 90%. And also tissue culturing is a process, and that process can fail for various reasons. Or like you said, one of the reasons could be that there's so much of that load or something is missed somehow. So it's possible for it to fail. I have had people ask me multiple times, hey, does it really work? You know, I had a friend who did tissue culturing and they got it back and, you know, they still had the problem. So it doesn't work. And it's not that it doesn't work. It's that it can fail to work because the people doing it might have missed something or maybe even something outside of their control happened.
Right. Or maybe needed a few more rounds in the cooker. Who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why you usually check afterwards if you're a professional and then, you know, confirm it for yourself.
Test
and then
it.
If that's still a problem, you know, that could be a false negative, you know, you know, that can also happen sometimes.
Man. Well, I mean, I'm not going to lie, kind of a little bit of like a scary thriller type episode here, because you just told us a lot of scary things about very small pathogens that exist out there that want to harm our gardens. But at least there's a way out of it. At least, you know, you can do some tissue culture cloning if you have to and get out of that virus or viroid mess. Any other points you wanted to cover here? I know that we have a little bit of a shorter episode today, but I want to make sure that you have a chance to talk all things viroids.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I want to make two points. One is that I do agree with you that hotplate and viroid is probably one of the worst things that we have in the cannabis space. And it does deserve, you know, if all of us can have a better biosecurity understanding, you know, just be a little bit cautious. I think that you will do you and other cultivators a lot of good just simply being cautious. It affects everyone. So it's definitely something to consider. And on top of that, there are other viruses that affect cannabis that you should be aware of, like lettuce sclerosis virus and beet curly top virus. I've made videos about those on my YouTube channel, Xenthanol, if you're curious to learn more, as well as a video on hoplite and viroid and viroid biology.
Go
so
sub.
If you are curious to know, you can interact with that.
Hell yeah, brother. Yeah, we'll have to do another deep dive soon, man. So listen, Xenthanol on YouTube, Sync Angel on Instagram. Give him a follow, everybody. We'll be back out in SoCal soon, man. We'll have to link up and do something. Maybe do a little podcast in person or something like that.
That'd be fun, yeah.
You got a grow going right now or no?
Not at the moment.
Oh, boo. You gonna start up soon or are you on a hiatus just doing the consulting and educating?
Yeah, probably a hiatus still, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But soon. I hope so. I do have some plans.
Okay, cool. Well, you keep us in the loop. We'll get you some of those GrowCast seed code genetics and we'll get you ripping, man. That'll be fantastic.
I believe it.
Awesome. That's all, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. Follow us at GrowCast on Instagram, of course. Get on the green list, growcastpodcast.com/list. You know all the deals. Follow Matthew Gates and stay tuned. Stay tuned for some classes coming up, some new stuff, some old stuff. You guys know the drill. We are signing off. This is Matthew Gates and Jordan River wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time, everybody. Be safe out there, y'all, and grow smarter. That's our show, everyone. Thank you to Matthew for being an amazing guest, and thank you, dear listener. Before we wrap it up, let me tell you about the Order of Cultivation, our membership community here at GrowCast. So much comes with joining the Order. Not only do you get members-only discounts on products that you hear on this show, like Rimrock Testing and Rain Science Grow Bags and even Dino Myco, deeper discounts than you can find anywhere else. That's just the beginning. You get hundreds of hours of bonus content, weekly live streams, GrowCast TV, the greatest show in cannabis cultivation. You get the community, you get events at discounts, you get discounts on GrowCast Seed Co., first dibs on GrowCast Seed Co. drops. The members-only Discord is active every single day. I'm in there on weekdays. If you ever want to come and smoke and hang out, if you ever have any questions, you can jump in voice chat. I will answer you. You can jump in the AMA live streams. Mary Beth will answer you. Rizo Rich will answer you. Never struggle with a garden problem again. Come home to your family, the Order of Cultivation, before we close our doors. The only thing I ask is that you are a positive-minded grower who is there to uplift others, not tear each other down. If you are going to bring in grower beef and drama, please don't join. But if you would like to come home to a community of cultivators that will help uplift you, check out the Order of Cultivation. GrowCastPodcast.com/membership is where you will find it. And join this week, and we will refund your join fee. You'll get 30 days free. Check it out. Consume all the content. Check out the GrowCast TVs. I know you'll love it. And if you don't, just hop out after 30 days. No charge to you. We will be closing our doors in 2023, so be sure to check it out, everybody. I look forward to inviting you into our cultivation family. Check out growcastpodcast.com/membership. Come on down. I'd love to see you in there. Thank you, everybody. And thank you to Matthew Gates for today's episode. Be safe in your gardens, all. Please do not hesitate to reach out if you need anything. Shout out to all the members out there, all the listeners. Hope you're doing incredible things in your grows. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Probably one of the worst things that we have in the cannabis space